Everybody! Woo-hoo! Here I am. It's Karen Hartglass to bring you another hour of It's All About Food. We're now in the second week of 2020. Can you believe it? Already? Here we go. Time just marches on, and there is no time. So figure that one out. I am very excited to bring on my guest. I can't wait to talk to her. She is one of these power wonder women, amazing people on the planet, and we need to clone her. Dr. Jamie Delaney practices cardiology and primary care in her wellness practice in Port Charlotte, Florida. Members of her practice have the opportunity of attending 3 different nutrition classes per week. Through plant-based nutrition education, she has had remarkable success in reversing lifestyle diseases such as cardiovascular disease, diabetes, hyperlipidemia, and autoimmune diseases. She co-authored the Plant-Based Wellness Cookbook, 3 Generations of Cooking with the Doctor, the Dietitian, and the Diva, that showcases family recipes and those taught in her nutrition class. Dr. Delaney is also an endurance athlete, having completed 7 full Ironman distance triathlons, 2 ultra marathons, and over 25 marathons. She just qualified for the Boston Marathon, plant-based, of course. She enjoys backyard gardening with a passion for tropical fruit trees and vegetables. Dr. Delaney also is an ethical vegan and a passionate rescuer of German Shepherd dogs. She's the host of Jamie Delaney, MD, Plant-Based Wellness Podcast with over 235 episodes posted weekly. Hello, Jamie. How are you today?
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm fabulous.
You are fabulous. You are fabulous. Thank you. We have a lot to talk about today. I just wanted to mention, I don't know how long ago it was, a year or so ago, when I see your posts pop up on Facebook. For a while, you were doing this push-up thing.
Yeah.
And every day you were adding more push-ups. I don't know. What did you ultimately get to?
I think I was doing about 50, 60 a day. At one point, it started with that the push-up challenge for mental health for our troops. And it got to be a kind of a funny video because my dogs and cats were always in the scene. And, you know, people started, you know, texting me that it was motivational. So I thought, okay, well, I'll keep it up, you know. And so I've moved on to planks. So I do some push-ups, but I'm not as rigorous as I was before. So I do planks every day. So we have in our practice, we have wellness challenges every month. So we try to do plank challenge, push-up challenge, step challenge. So we mix it up a little bit more than I used to.
Well, in your honor, I tried to do 20 push-ups today. The first 10 were good. 15 were okay. The last 5 were, Yeah, I moved a little bit, but I was very impressed, and it is very motivational, just like the Game Changers documentary. I've seen it twice, and every time I see it, I just want to work out.
I know. It's a great movie. I think it was such great inspiration to bring on board the young people, young athletes, you know, because, I have people that, you know, they'll say, oh, it's okay for you, mom and dad, but, you know, I don't have anything wrong with me and I don't need it. But this shows how athletic performance is improved so much, you know, with plant-based nutrition. And I'm a living testament. I ran my fastest marathon here in December being plant-based. The recovery is so much better, you know, eating plant-based than it ever was, you know, back in the yesteryear. And, you know, you can train more. And if you can train more, you can do more.
Right. Now, you were an endurance athlete before you went plant-based?
A few years, not a tremendous, and I don't know the time frame, but there wasn't much time as, not because I actually, I went plant-based. I went, you know, more vegan than plant-based and was, you know, going around, but it was doing running, training for a marathon that I heard about Forks Over Knives. And that's, you know, how things got started in my practice. So I would say I probably did a couple years not plant-based or transitioning, you know, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But it's been plant-based ever since.
I'm just curious, what do you think about during an ultramarathon?
You know, it's to me, you know, I have only done to a 50K. I think there's probably a 50 miler in my future.
Okay, wait a minute. Don't just say only, okay? 50K is serious.
Yeah, the sleep, when people do this, the multiple day sleep deprivation, I think you might start getting into maybe not as much benefit as, you know, there's a little bit of issue with, you know, multiple day sleep deprivation things. But all in all, you know, studies have shown, and they keep coming out, that there's no upper limits for exercise. You can't be in too good a shape. You know, so I think if you train properly, eat properly, the problem we have is, you know, sometimes it becomes a smorgasbord of junk food at some of these, during the aid stations, you know, what kind of junk I've seen people eating, you know, honey buns and goofy things. But, so I think you have to take your nutrition as well as the endurance part of it seriously. And, you know, when you do that, I think it's pretty safe if you, you know, use your head a little bit like anything else.
Right. Now I'm going to ask the question again. What do you think about while you're running that all that time?
I solve all the world's problems. You know, there's to me, running is my meditation. I run for the most part in the mornings, and I love coming back when the sun's coming up. I have an older dog as well as a middle-aged or a younger, I guess, dog. So we take a really slow first lap with the first dog, and then I drop her off, and then Gretchen and I go out for, you know, some more miles. And it's, you know, it's just fun. And it's, you just, your head just kind of floats away for whatever. And I find it very peaceful. On my long runs, you know, I listen to other podcasts and get ideas, and, you know, so, or audiobooks.
So, sure. Okay. Well, I guess it's not much different than those of us who do short runs. It's just longer.
Yeah, it's just longer. You know, I it's a great excuse to be outside. I love the outdoors. And, you know, when I go out for a longer run on Saturday, it's like I get to play outside for, you know, 4 hours or whatever. So.
Mm-hmm. And the west coast of Florida, I'm familiar with the east coast of Florida, Fort Lauderdale, Miami, Boca Raton, all those places. But the west coast is very different, and I find it's a lot more beautiful.
Yeah, it's you know, it's a little bit more laid back here. You know, it's starting to become, you know, a little bit more touristy, I guess, over the time. Port Charlotte was originally more of a fishing community. So people that would, you know, winter down here that like to fish or be outside boats, sailboats, a rich sailboat community. And so that's, in course, golfing. That's really what drew people. But we get the New York Midwest typically come. Upper New York, Midwest typically come to this side, or that's where a lot of people, you know, spend their winters down here. But yeah, it's a nice place to be outside. There's, you know, again, besides the boating, paddleboarding, those kind of things, it's a great place to run and cycle.
Okay, so you have this fantastic practice, and you've, as I understand it, designed it in your own way, including nutrition and offering all kinds of things that a normal practice would not offer.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, when I was a traditional cardiologist for many years, and I, you know, when I started running marathons, I started putting my finishers medals and t-shirts. We frame them and put them up in the different rooms to try to motivate people to exercise. And we always have this wellness in the back of our heads. And, you know, when I heard about Dr. Esselstyn and how he took people, and, you know, what resonated with me was that he took the time to teach them the how and the why. If you know the science behind something, you're more likely to actually adopt it. And so I thought, well, we'll just do that. And that's started, you know, an evening class with 16 people to come in, and I did a little cooking demonstration and did a little, actually it started out just a whiteboard type of lecture and then moved on to PowerPoint talks. And we'd introduce a green, you know, a nitric oxide producing green to them, and a new grain, a new whole grain, you know, whether it was farro or, you know, pearl barley or farro or something, you know, or Afrika or something like that. So every week we tried to, you know, incorporate the talk and the menu, and teach people how to get food on the table quickly, you know, 30-minute meals that didn't take, you know, a recipe book and a degree in culinary, you know, whatever. And quickly we started noticing people's blood pressure started to normalize, their diabetes started getting better, their diabetic neuropathy started going away, their angina started going away. And it's like, oh my goodness, you know, this is true. It does work. And it went from one class to two classes to three classes. And we actually moved out of the building into a house that in a different location for a while, and then actually came back and brought and tore down a wall in my office and put a kitchen in and a classroom. So now we can house about 25 people, and we have you know, a full kitchen to work out of and do the demos. We do cutting classes. So, you know, we put the, you know, like the desks all together like you did in grade school and do chopping courses. We make we bring a bunch of Instant Pots in and make soups. And then when I changed my practice, I grandfathered in all my 90-year-olds. You know, being a cardiologist in Florida for over 20 years, I've accumulated some people over time. And so we took about 30 90-year-olds, actually the oldest 101. Wow. And we grandfathered them in, so they don't pay anything. They come for free. And so we deliver soups. We make things in class and actually deliver it to them if they're in an assisted living facility or a nursing home or even at their own home. So it's nice to make a visit and bring some soup. So it's a cool thing.
Oh my goodness. Where did you, and why aren't there like more of you?
You know, it's the best thing that's ever happened. Okay. You know, I went for you, just people getting, you know, medicine after medicine to all of a sudden people feeling good and being happy. What's not to like?
What's not to like about that? I mean, isn't that why most people go medical practice? And then something happens.
Yeah, something happened. You know, we turned big box shopping into big box medicine. And took the, you know, I grew up in a little town in West Virginia where there was a GP that was the doctor for the town, and he delivered all the babies and he knew you and your grandparents and everything. And I always admired that. And we've always run a family practice, you know, family type oriented practice, meaning that my daughter's been in the office. My mother's been in the hanging out in the office. My nurse and secretary have worked for me for the whole entire time I've been in this private practice. And so our patients know us. They know our families. We know them. And we try to treat people like, you know, we would treat our family. I've coached, you know, I've rearranged my schedule to coach track and basketball, whatever, and my patients know about that. And so it's a very open family style practice, and it only made sense to take it this one step further and incorporate nutrition and wellness into it.
I love it. Okay. I want to talk about this conference that is coming up in March that I'm going to be a part of, which I'm very excited about. Yeah, so it's the 5th annual. Can you tell me about it and what happens and everything?
You know, I've always been one that's like, well, let's just have a conference and we'll see what happens. And so 5 years ago, we invited Dr. Esselstyn and Anne down for our first annual conference, and we wanted to showcase plant-based nutrition, you know, without oil, salt, or sugar. And so we had them speak and I spoke. We did a cooking demo and people loved it because it was a room of about 125 people, mainly from the, you know, community. And so we had people come from wherever, but, you know, mainly locally or visitors to the area. And it, all of a sudden they got to be in a room that was just positive, you know, all over. The people shared their experiences. You know, it wasn't about why are you doing this? It's like, how can we do better? And it was just a big hit. So we decided to, you know, keep doing it. So every year we invite a couple guests. Last year we had Dr. Goldhammer down. The year before we had Dr. Lyle down. And so this year we're having a girls event. So it'll be great. We're having you and Pam Popper and my daughters going to speak. And we're going to have a cooking cook-off, you know, with all of us. I think that'll be fabulous. Share recipes from all our book and all our brains. And just have a great day. So I have the funny story about how it's evolved. We typically held it at a country club. It's one of the, you know, the bigger venues that we have, but last year we had a problem with the chef at the country club that he just really wasn't getting on the plant-based wagon. And I was afraid because obviously this is, we're showcasing just like you. It's all about the food. If the food's bad, you know, we're going to crash here. And we actually fired the chef and hired a lady that's real into plant-based, a chef that's, you know, does private catering. And so now, you know, we have our own chef that is going to be here second year in a row. We previously just had to, you know, hope and pray. But we have, you know, our plant-based, no oil, salt, sugar chef and a great venue at a Port Charlotte little beach complex that looks out on the water. You know, a little wellness and a little mobility in between and a great breakfast and lunch and, you know, Q&A. So it'll be a great day. And, you know, so this is the fifth year for this and we decided to actually extend it. And we're trying to, you know, offer a limited spot for people to come a week in advance to hang out with us. And, you know, we're not going to make them run ultra marathons, but, you know, we do want to do the early morning exercise wherever, you know, wherever people happen to be and an afternoon, you know, a Florida experience of some sort of exercise and cooking demos and nutrition courses and, you know, wellness evaluations and just work with people for a whole week and really get them a plan so that when they leave after the conference, they've got a goal for the next, you know, 6 months to a year, what they want to accomplish. And they've got a good base, you know, for their exercise, because it's not all about, you know, no, I should say it is all about the food, but there's also, you got to move, right? You just can't sit and eat plant-based and help to be, and hope to be healthy. So we want people to move and to be mobile and to eat plant-based. And so we're hoping to give people the opportunity to spend a week with us to do that.
I'm thinking of classic types of vacations that people go on. So they like to go to the beach, they like to go to beautiful places, but coupled with that is eating all the wrong foods and eating a lot of it, and people complain about gaining weight on vacation. And I don't know that I would think of it as a vacation, this thing that you're planning. And what a great gift it would be to yourself to be able to be in a beautiful environment and relax and at the same time take care of yourself and take something with you that you can use for the rest of your life.
Yeah, it's a win-win situation, you know. It's a, like I said, March and the west coast of Florida is a beautiful time. The skies are blue, and to be in a positive environment and, you know, enjoy, you know, I always tell people I enjoy every meal that I eat. I look forward to every meal that I eat and I enjoy every meal, you know, and so you should. It's just, it's all about fun and all about enjoyment and, you know, and being well.
So, how do people find out about this conference? They go to drdelaney.com.
Yes, absolutely. There's a link right there. It's spelled out DOCTORDULANEY.com, and there's a drop down to sign up for the conference for either the 1 day conference or the immersion. And if anybody has any questions, there's a phone number that they can call, and we'd be happy to talk with them more about how it goes. And you know, the venue is you know, a nice hotel in town. And actually, the evening meal is going to be, you know, hosted by a local restaurant that through our plant-based wellness program, we've partnered with a restaurant in town that he actually has one time a month a full vegan menu. And every day of the week, he has a Dr. Delaney approved entree. Mm. And so Chef Keith is going to be doing dinner for us every evening. So he's very well versed and, you know, so beautiful food, you know, beautiful environment. So it's great.
I remember my partner Gary and I, we did a show. We had a show for a while called The Swing Gourmets. We called it the Happy Earth Day Review when we would do it on Earth Day, which is also my birthday. And then we modified it depending on who we were doing it for. And we did it part of a Dr. Furman event. And we ended up performing late in the day after they'd had a full day of lectures. And I know everybody was exhausted. But it was funny because Gary went into the men's room and he could hear some of the men just like, they weren't exactly complaining, but they had been eating this new food and they were experiencing the changes in the bathroom.
Funny.
Yeah, which is important to talk about.
Right, because I think it's going to happen. You know, people, you know, they think something, you know, strange is going on when GI functions actually become normal for humans versus, you know, other species of animals that that it typical, you know, so it's like, no, this is not, you know, some GI disturbance. This is actually, you know, this is some normal things that are happening and it's all good.
Yeah. And sometimes it can be a little uncomfortable in the beginning. People might have more gas because they're consuming more fiber, but, and they just need to know that this will pass.
Yes.
Pun intended.
Yes.
Can we talk about your cookbook?
Certainly. Certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so we started doing the nutrition class, and like I said, it grew to 3 classes a week, and we had certain recipes that we were doing that people liked in class. And, you know, my co-authors are my 86-year-old mother and my daughter, who's a registered dietitian. And so they're also family recipes that we like at home. And one of the classes that we do, or one of the sessions we do, we actually go to the local grocery store and we're walking through the grocery store and we spend a lot of time in the produce section. And I'll say, you know, this is cauliflower. This is what you do with this. This is, you know, whatever, you know, broccoli rabe and what we do, you know, what I do with this. And people say, what, you know, what's that recipe? What's that recipe? And it's like, you know, so we, he said, you need to make a cookbook. And it's like, great. You know, we'll just throw this thing together. We have all these recipes that we do in class. It should be easy. You know, not.
Nothing's ever easy.
Yeah, you know, Amazon says all you got to do is, you know, you send some pictures in, send some recipes in, they magically, you know, go into the machine and come out a cookbook. Well, that's not exactly how it went, but through trial and tribulation, we managed to get it together without too many family feuds. And, you know,
came up it's beautiful.
Yeah, these recipes that, you know, like I said, we like. One thing that I'm really proud of is the introduction to the book is dedicated to my grandmother, Addie Delaney. Mm-hmm. And she passed from heart disease and diabetes. And really, you know, truth be known, that's why I do what I do. I spent a lot of time with her. She was a wonderful Irish cook and she made this salt rice and bread. And of course, you know, we, again, growing up in West Virginia, it was lard and whole milk in this recipe. And I really wanted to put this recipe that starts using a potato fermented starter.
I love that. And I really want to try it. When I read that, I was like, I got to try this.
Yeah, it's a real dense, you know, heavy bread. So I thought, well, okay, if I can make this with soy milk and take out the oil, then it's a go. And it works, you know. So I was so, you know, so happy to be able to put that in there. But you know, my mom's a big soup gal. She's an Italian, you know, cook. And we, of course, the stuffed shells, we always have a stuffed shell cook-off at Christmas time. She makes them, I make them. And we have, you know, a lot of guests in and, you know, whose is whose, you know. And Addie's a big baker and dessert person. And so it all worked out. We all had our niches in there.
Well, it's beautiful. I want to know, why is your daughter the diva?
No, my daughter's the dietitian.
Oh, who's the diva? Your mom?
Diva is my mom. Yeah.
Or you? When you?
No, I'm the doctor. Addie is the dietitian.
And your daughter's the diva. Right. Okay. Your mom's the diva.
And when you meet my daughter or my mother, when you come down here, she helps me in nutrition class. And we used to call her little Van in nutrition class because she would serve, pick up things, and kind of be my right hand lady. And so we nicknamed her little Van in nutrition class. Like Vanna White, but that wasn't going to work for a cookbook. So, you know, when you meet her, you'll understand who the diva is real quick.
Okay, I can't wait. I mean, one of the things that I like about this cookbook is how family-oriented it is with little anecdotes and the importance of not only preparing meals, but preparing meals for your family. And it makes such a difference. Not just because you're eating healthy, nutritious food and you know exactly what's going into the meals you're making, but to gather around a table is important. And everyone's gotten away from that.
Yeah, I can't stress that importance either. We've always been a family that ate together. And, you know, no matter what was going on, whether it was, you know, a basketball event or a track event or whatever, there was always a time out to have dinner together. And most, you know, we didn't eat out very often, and we've all enjoyed cooking. Like I said, I grew up around my grandmother cooking, Addie and grew up around my mother cooking and myself, you know, and we were all in the kitchen together. And, you know, I think that does build for a strong family bond. And again, you know, you learn the ways of your parents, you know, so mm-hmm. if you've never eaten out, I had a person join the practice that, you know, in her 30s had a lot of, even had a tumor in her esophagus. Thank goodness it was benign, but nevertheless a tumor. And she had never not eaten fast food for dinner. She grew up, they, you know, everybody was busy and they grabbed takeout fast food every meal. And she was very ill in her 30s, you know, largely because of what she ate.
Wow.
And, you know, and of course, then we hear people saying, well, their children are picky or they don't eat this or they eat, but they weren't exposed to it, you know. So it's so important to expose children early on to these different vegetables. And like you say, just to be around each other, you know, you look somebody in the eye, you know, if they're happy or they're sad or something happened. And it's, you know, you remain close when you eat together.
Can I pick out some of the recipes that I really liked in your book?
Certainly.
Okay. So a lot of them are similar to how we cook at home, but they're a little twists. And I always like raise my eyebrow and go, oh, that's a nice idea. Some of the ones that I like that I can't wait to try are the baked coconut tofu. We do a lot of baked tofu, and I like your idea of coating the tofu either with the coconut. You have another recipe, a garlic eggplant stir fry with baked tofu, and you put like a rice flour breading on the tofu and crisp it up in the oven before you stir fry it. Both of those sound really yummy.
Yeah, we really like those. And they actually double as a good hors d'oeuvre, you know, so when people, if you have, and they're great for kids because, again, it's like a finger food. It's almost a chicken nugget type of deal, you know, when you can pick the little tofu squares up and eat them. And they have, you know, good flavor. We use a little almond milk to, or some sort of, you know, plant milk to coat them so the coconut, you know, sticks to them as well as a little rice. Yeah. And it's real quick.
The other one I wanted to mention, you make a deviled tomato where instead of the egg white, you use a tomato and stuff it with a similar filling that a deviled egg is filled with. I don't know if you ever had this or tried this, but you can take silken tofu and cook it with a little agar powder. And I like to add a little onion powder too. And then you can put it in these, you know, the egg holders you get in a refrigerator.
Right, right.
You can put the silken tofu mixture in them and make what looks like half of a hard boiled egg.
Wow. No, I have not.
And then you can scoop a little out and put your deviled egg mixture in. They look just like deviled eggs.
Wow, I'm going to try that. That may be a new class recipe. That might be something we do. Yeah.
I mean, I like the tomato better, actually, because it's so colorful and tomatoes are good for you and it's a lot easier. But there's just something fun about that.
It's always fun to kind of surprise.
Eat an egg. Yeah.
Surprise people that aren't plant-based. Yeah, we do that. We do the little carrot, you know, the carrot dog recipe for Christmas in hors d'oeuvres. We did the pizza dough and, you know, we did little carrots and wrapped them like, you know, people used to eat pigs. Kids eat pigs in the blanket, whether the mini hot dogs in the crescent roll thing. So we did that with our homemade dough and the marinated carrots and dipped those. And people, you know, they thought they were eating a little hot dog. They didn't know, you know, the lights are a little dim and everybody was happy.
I love it. Anyway, there's a bunch of recipes in here that I've had this cookbook a while now, and I have to admit I haven't dug into it, but this interview has prompted me to really take a look at it, and it's really quite good. I look at a lot of cookbooks, and I can tell that you've made a lot of these recipes, and they're colorful and tasty, and surprise, they're good for you.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean they truly are. They've stood the test of multiple nutrition classes as well as our family. You know, when my mom, like I said, she's 86 now, and she didn't become plant-based. I guess she was probably around 80, and she had a bout with lymphoma, and that was really what I took over all the cooking for both sides of the, you know, the both kitchens. And so, okay, now we're all plant-based. That was like the last straw. And, you know, she started to say, you know, some things she liked, some things she didn't like. And she's like, you know, make that again. That'll be a go-to. We call it a go-to recipe. You know, something that tasted good, you know, would be the, let's do that one again. It's a go-to, or, you know, as opposed to maybe not, you know. And that's kind of how everything evolved with us is, you know, these are our, and we try to do that with our, you know, the members in the class is find some recipes, you know, 4 or 5 recipes that are your go-to that you really like on a regular basis. And then the other days you can experiment if you want, or to try something, but you got to keep it simple, especially when you're first starting out, something you really like, something that's, you know, you can make without, you know, going back and forth and following a recipe in real detail, something maybe you can make your own. You know, some of these recipes you can do little tweaks on and make them your own. And, but it gives you enough basics that, you know, you feel comfortable in the kitchen doing this, and that really helps people.
Absolutely. Well, I cannot wait to meet you in person and be a participant in your upcoming conference. I'm very excited, and I hope some folks that are listening, you'll check out Dr. Delaney's website and see if you want to join us. It's going to be a lot of fun, especially with Dr. Pam Popper. She is amazing also. It's just the energy is going to be incredible, and I just may learn something.
I think we'll all learn something and have a great time in the process. So I am super excited. It's going to be a really fun week and weekend, and a good time is promised to all.
Great. Well, thank you for joining me today, and I'm just looking forward to meeting you.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, that was Dr. Jamila Delaney, and you can find out more at drdelaney.com, and you have to spell out the doctor, drdorduelaney.com, and join us. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's at the end of March. Check it out. Okay, let's take a break. No, let's not take a break. I got so much to talk about, and I want to bring on my favorite person to talk about it with, Gary. Gary DiMattei, are you with me?
Yes, Karen. I'm so happy I'm back. Can you hear me okay?
I can. You know, I wanted you to come back, and you know why I wanted to come back, because we babbled so much last week, and we didn't finish talking about everything that we wanted to talk about.
Right. Some very
and
important.
One thing that we wanted to talk about, and I don't want to forget this time, is the Eat for the Planet cookbook.
Yes, we're in that.
Because we're in it.
As well as a lot of other folks that are helping.
And I think we have more recipes than anybody else, but I haven't counted everybody's exactly, but I've heard that rumor.
I think you're right. And no, we haven't counted.
Anyway, what's exciting about this book, it's by Neil Zacharias, the co-founder of One Green Planet, and he wrote a book called Eat for the Planet. And our friend Gene Stone, who is a New York Times bestselling author of Forks Over Knives, and he's ghostwritten a number of books, and he's co-authored a number of books.
Farm Sanctuary Cookbook.
That's right. We have recipes in that book, too.
Gene is a big part of the Farm Sanctuary Cookbook, as well as so many other cookbooks. And yeah, Eat for the Planet, the delicious, informative guide to eating vegan, featuring 75 recipes from some of the world's greatest plant-based chefs.
I mean, we didn't say that. That's what the book says.
The book says that 75 recipes from some of the world's greatest plant-based chefs. And I'm really honored to be included in that group because there are some amazing plant-based chefs. I'm honored that Responsible Eating and Living is included in that.
We've got Chef Chad Sarno and his brother Derek Sarno.
Yes.
They are amazing chefs and creators of, what is it called? Fresh Catch or Something Catch. They make a plant-based seafood. I forget exactly what it's called. Forgive me. And
other brands like Beyond Meat and Ripple Foods.
Tofurky.
Innovative plant-based restaurants such as Veggie Grill, Next Level Burger, and the Stanford Inn, one of our favorite places to go in Mendocino, California.
That's right, Jeff Stanford. He has a recipe in here.
We love the Stanford Inn. The Stanford Inn is fabulous.
Yeah, we love the Stanford Inn. If you're looking for a wonderful place to get away, really get away. It's the Stanford Inn. It's in Mendocino. I had never been to Mendocino, and I just kept singing the song, Talk to Me of Mendocino, and I wanted to go. Took me decades. Gary's a native Californian. He had never been there, and we finally got to go, a couple of years ago,
thanks to the friends of ours at Playful People Productions in Northern California, where we oftentimes work.
It's a vegan resort. Okay, yeah. And the food is amazing, and the everything about it, the energy. Yeah.
It's
anyway,
fabulous.
We have some wonderful recipes in this book. I'm just looking.
Yeah. Wonderful.
I was talking to Dr. Delaney a moment ago about some recipes we have to try, and one of them is a coconut tofu. It's a baked tofu dipped in coconut.
That's in her book, right?
That's in her book. But in this book, we have our oven-baked zucchini fries recipe. Mm-hmm. And it tastes like the zucchini has been deep-fried, but they haven't. They're baked.
It's a wonderful recipe.
And what's the secret? You're going to have to get the book to find out.
Yeah, definitely buy the book. It's really... it's really going to a great cause, too. And, of course, we donated our recipes to this book. We're not making any money off of it, so let's be clear about that. But we want you to support Eat for the Planet because they are a good group of people, just like
There's another great recipe in here that we need to make sometime soon. It's one of these special occasion recipes because, it's a little complicated. I know people like to make things that are quick, but sometimes you just have to spend some time in the kitchen and invest and make a masterpiece. And we have an eggplant rollatini with spinach and almond ricotta filling.
Right. Delicious.
Pretty amazing.
Getting hungry. I always get hungry when I do your show. Why is that? I guess it's because it's all about food.
Well, when we talk about delicious plant food, yes, you get hungry. We could go to the dark side and talk about food issues that would probably turn your stomach.
Well, here's one that we were discussing this morning at our morning meeting that really has me just wanting some answers. So I've been doing some research, and I was telling you the story about the loaf of bread on the pedestal in the cafe in Greenwich Village the other day, right before I was going to take my class. This man walked in, he had a loaf of bread, this big, gorgeous looking baguette of wheat bread, and he was holding it like it was the Academy Award that he had just won. I mean, and he tried to find a place for it because the cafe tables are small, so he found this little corner ledge that I guess you could put a knickknack on, like a shelf, and it was empty in this little tiny cafe. So he put his loaf of bread on this, and again, this is a loaf of bread that's at least a yardstick long, right?
Oh.
And he puts it up on this ledge, and it's there advertising the name of the bakery on the bag that the loaf of bread is in. Sits down, has his breakfast, and then leaves with this loaf of bread under his arm. And I thought, bread used to be this very wholesome, nutrient-dense food mm-hmm. that was life-sustaining. I mean, you could always eat bread, and it was inexpensive. And they're beautiful looking. I mean, they're gorgeous, these loaves of bread that are coming out of these bakeries. But then when you look closer at how wheat has been, as you would say, hybridized. And I guess there's glyphosate now in some wheats.
Right. So in conventional industrial grown wheat, they don't use Roundup Ready, which contains glyphosate, as a herbicide for pests. They use it instead to desiccate or to dry the crop so that they can harvest it more quickly. And they're right. finding more wheat products and oat products. And even the Impossible Burger has a lot of glyphosate residue. So the wheat has been, what can we say, compromised.
Right. Yes. And that was heartbreaking for me to learn that several years ago. And I haven't had wheat bread in a long time. I mean, occasionally I will. And so I'm thinking, as I'm doing my research, that there are wheats out there that claim they are glyphosate-free. And so I think we need to do some research on this so we can share
well,
it.
Well, if it's organic, it right. won't have glyphosate residue, or it shouldn't. I mean, there's another leap of faith there that we assume it's not going to right. have that residue.
And
but also, going back to the more, I think you want to go to the more heritage or original grains before they were bastardized, before they were hybridized, like einkorn.
Right. Einkorn is definitely one of them. A lot of the wheats that you think don't have any glyphosates, according to a quick search that I've been doing, you know, they do. They have this, they claim to be, these great products, and actually people have been doing some research and finding out that they are. And I know a lot of people are anti-wheat now just because it's gluten, and a lot of people are gluten intolerant. But there are some folks out there, maybe some of you who are listening that are out there, that eat bread that are plant-based but also eat wheat and maybe weren't aware of this glyphosate problem. And if you have any information for us, please share it with us, and we'll share it with everyone on our website and on this program here, because I'm a person that misses wheat. But, you know, I don't eat it all the time, but occasionally I like to. And I use a wheat that I was told is glyphosate-free for some of my homemade breads.
And, sure. I think that there are a lot of theories out there, but I think a lot of the wheat-related problems are due to the glyphosate,
right?
And not necessarily the wheat itself. And we learn all the time about interactions. So mm-hmm. when in science, it's a reductionist type of business where a study will be made looking at one thing and mm-hmm. seeing how different things affect that one thing. But right. our bodies are integrated. Our food is integrated. There's lots of different ingredients and chemicals that work together, work against each other. And we can't just like test one thing. It's helpful. It gives us information. But there's a lot of interactions going on. So there are right. things that may work with or against wheat proteins mm-hmm. that we don't know about.
Right. Exactly. You know, and just to get back to the flour that I've used, and I wanted to find it online before I talked about it, it's a flour called Jovial.
And, oh, yeah.
And it claims, and I'll read to you a little blurb here about the brand. Jovial, never underestimate the determination of a parent whose child has a food allergy. Before starting Jovial, the founders were on a mission to find alternative ingredients that wouldn't aggravate their daughter's symptoms from gluten sensitivity. Einkorn, an ancient wheat, was the answer, and they turned their discovery into a business to help others too. Today, the brand offers a popular line of, and then it goes on. And it's organic. Einkorn flour contains wheat. But anyway.
Okay, wait a minute. Stop. Full stop here. Have you been reading my emails?
No, did you just get that?
Well, I got a couple of emails today from one of my listeners, Bob. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob.
We're going to talk about you today because there's some serendipitous thing going on here. And he was wanting me to find someone who would talk more about ancient grains and perhaps einkorn wheat and the grains that might help us in our health. And you brought it up. And then he just sent me a note. And I know I shouldn't be looking at my phone while I'm doing the show, but, you know, sometimes people have comments. And he just mentioned the only pasta we will eat going forward is Einkorn Fusilli by Jovial Foods. Great tasting product. No wheat belly. Is
all
that
right,
crazy?
Bob, that's weird. We're connected to Bob. No, I did not read your mail. And that's weird that I would be discussing that with you this morning at our meeting, because I really miss bread. You know, it's something that I miss. And again, I don't eat a lot of it, but I miss wheat bread. Now, we make great bread that's gluten-free, but you know, there's something about a big hunk of wheat French bread.
Yes, you know, when we made that dinner, when was it, in August? We catered a dinner for a fundraiser and made some amazing food. And just like at the last minute, we were using wheat because these were not people who were concerned about eating wheat. And you said, why don't you make some bread? Because we had a lot of extra flour. And I find bread making with wheat very simple. And I just whipped up tons of loaves, remember? And it was just great having all of this fresh bread.
It was delicious. And now that there are so many amazing, again, we keep talking about Miyoko, but she needs to be talked about a lot. She has that great cultured vegan butter, which you can't call butter, you know, spread, whatever you want to call it.
States, yeah.
Right. So
I don't know how many states, but you can't call it butter in a few states.
Yeah. So wouldn't you then take the lead from I can't believe it's not butter and just call it, you're not supposed to call it butter? I mean,
but why not? It's so crazy.
You could do that, right? I mean, you could say
I don't know. My
product is called you're not supposed to call it butter. And be done with it.
Well,
but anyway,
the craziness about that, Gary, is that we have cashew butter, we have almond butter, we have peanut butter. We have cocoa butter. So why can't we have plant butter?
Because I think we know the answer to that, because it's a horribly corrupt organization, the dairy industry. Anyway,
and they're suffering.
Right, and so they're going to start getting really nasty. We've only seen the beginning, and I'm not trying to be an alarmist here. I'm just, it's happening, right? We're going to start seeing some desperation coming out of these folks because the plant-based movement is taking over. Again, we talked last week, or was it last week, or was it 2 weeks ago?
It was last week.
It was last week. Wow. We talked last week about how the Golden Globes went vegan, and now another award show is going vegan. And the only reason I bring those up is because they're always in the spotlight. They're always great for people to click on, and they're in the news. So awards are in the news. Awards season, they call it. I personally think the award thing is a little out of control, but that said, hey, if it helps get the word out about the vegan plant-based movement, then so be it. But now, will the Oscars follow suit? I know the Oscars don't serve dinner, but there's all these big, high-profile parties that they have. Will some of these parties start following suit and only serve plant-based? Who's to tell, right?
Right. I hope so.
Yeah, that would be nice because they are the biggest as far as that's concerned. And the highest of profile, old Mr. Oscar. Anyway, so yeah, so that was cool about the serendipitous email you got from Bob about the wheat. That was great.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about a couple of other things. I don't know what's on your list in the next 7 minutes that we have left.
Right.
But one I wanted to talk about is eggs. the egg, the incredible not so edible egg. I just was alerted to a new study put out by our friends at the PCRM, Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Neil Barnard, MD, is the lead author, and he's got a report out called Industry Funding and Cholesterol Research, a Systematic Review. It's an interesting study, and the findings, I'm not that surprised to see that there were industry-funded studies on eggs and non-industry-funded studies on eggs. And guess what? The ones that were non-industry-related saw bigger cholesterol increases from consuming eggs than the industry-funded studies. And yet the industry-funded studies, this is hard to say, reported conclusions that didn't actually make sense with their results, because everybody had cholesterol increases, but they were just basically trying to say, yeah, you can eat eggs.
Right. Wow.
And the point is, no, we shouldn't eat eggs. Not only is it horrifically cruel for the majority of the egg industry, the way the chickens are raised to make the eggs, it's just a disaster. But we don't need to be consuming chicken eggs or any other animal's egg.
Right.
And we make so many wonderful recipes that are similar to egg-related products.
Yes.
I mean, we do at home. We just had our tofu scramble this morning. It was yummy.
Right. It was great. And we've talked about this before, but ironically, it's called chickpea flour because it was something that was the chickpea was used to feed chickens. We like to call it garbanzo bean flour, but we use a lot of garbanzo bean flour when we want to make things like frittatas, and we want to bind vegetables together and bake it in the oven like you would need a binder. We find it's a great binder, and it tastes a whole lot better than what you were just talking about with respect to eggs. But also, the cruelty factor, as you mentioned, it's so horrible. It's just, and how people can turn their back on that. And yeah, some people say, well, I only buy free range. That's equally, if not more, it's been proven to be more cruel than, it can't be as cruel as stuffing birds in cages, it's right up there with that kind of horrific treatment of these birds. And some people have chickens in their yards and they eat the eggs that way, and I'll get arguments from people like that. Well, I love my chickens and they love me, but we're going into an area now where the whole concept of breeding animals for pets is debatable. Who are we to say that those animals want to be with us, right? And that's an argument that I've had with folks before. And I love a dog and a cat and domestic pets, as people call them, as much as the next guy, more probably. But I would never have one because, first of all, I can't have one here in our apartment in New York. But and it's not to say that I haven't had them before. But the whole concept of, raising an animal so that it can be my companion, I'm really having a problem with lately.
Yeah. Well, let's go back a little bit, and it's kind of related to chickens, and it's related to cows that we breed in order to make food. And the same thing about what people call pets. Some of us may call them companion animals. Many of them are bred and they're taken from their mother.
Right.
To join a family who's going to really love that little puppy.
Right.
But do we realize what we're doing?
And that's the thing I'm telling you about. I have trouble with that. And of course, I'm not going to take it away from anyone who, has to have a pet, a companion animal physical reasons, emotional reasons. I mean, this is not what I'm talking about. And yes, there are so many pets out there that need to be adopted.
That haven't been bred.
That haven't been bred. And, you know,
or maybe
yes,
we don't know. Some of them can be mixed but yeah, they haven't been bred by commercial breeders.
Right. Yeah. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the philosophy behind how we got started on this road. You know, mm-hmm, how we got started on you know, watching other animals breed so that we could then kill them and eat them. Or actually now what happens in these factories that breed animals is that they, for all intents and purposes, rape the animal by inseminating them with, you know, machinery, sometimes something as crude as a turkey baster. You know, it's just the whole, how did we go down this road? It's kind of...
How did we get here?
How
did we get here?
It's a dark road.
And people some people are going nuts about what's going on in the world today. And there's horrible things going on, but things have been going on. We've gone down this crazy exploited path, and now it's just exploding. We have 1 minute left. What do you want to talk about in 1 minute?
How wonderful life is if you go vegan. And
amen.
Check us out. We're here for you. We have a lot of great recipes, a lot of great podcasts, a lot of wonderful information at our website. We'd love to hear from you. And we'd love you to download our app. ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com has an app, so you don't have to type in that long phrase. And and let us know what you're eating.
All right, thanks to Bob.
Thanks, Bob. And
thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Karen, for having me on your show again. I'm really honored. It's a great show.
Okay, I think that wraps it up. So thanks, Gary, for joining me.
Thanks.
And everybody check out the Eat for the Planet cookbook.
Yeah. And thanks PRN for being awesome.
Oh, yes, with 12 million listeners in 2019. I'm so proud to be a part of Progressive Radio Network. And a shout out to everybody who worked so hard there. Woo-hoo!
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap this up. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to me and Gary DeMattei, co-founders of Responsible Eating and Living. You can write to us at info@realmeals.org. Oh, yeah. Have a delicious week, everybody.
Bye-bye.